Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Web Midnight Black Mass, a production brought to you by GeorgeWrestlingHistory.com, where we bring you discussions and interviews with figures from wrestling, entertainment, and general pop culture. And now, the GWH Radio Network presents Midnight Black Mass.
This is the time to share with family. Yay! And since I don't have one of my own, aww, I decided to steal one.
Final Tap, wishing you and yours the most joyous of holiday seasons.
God bless
everyone.
Come all ye unfaithful. Don't be left out in the cold. I hope you stuffed your fat faces with plenty of turkey on a big Thanksgiving holiday. This is your host, the devil you know, the maniacal minister of the occult, the Reverend Dan Wilson, with another edition of the Midnight Black Mass. Had a couple weeks off, had a nice layoff there. We had one of our more popular previous episodes. Special guest Robert Everett, former member of G.G. Allen and the Carolina Shit Kickers, giving lots of revelations on his extremely interesting life and times, views and opinions, tastes. It's a magnificent interview, so you want to go check that out on the archive, as Rich Tate and our good buddies over at GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com took care of us by running the archive. It was the Rev's birthday, and what was the Rev doing, you ask? I was at NWA Chattanooga in Soddy Daisy, Tennessee on November the 18th, managing in the main event the Deadly Sin 7, 300-plus pounds against the NWA Southeastern heavyweight champion, the strong-style Psycho Tank, also 300-plus pounds. You get two guys as mean as that in the ring. Whoa, Nelly. They beat the ever-living piss out of each other, as one would expect, and match didn't end up in what we wanted, but it certainly ended up interesting. We wanted to walk out of there the champion. We wanted to maim Tank. I wanted to make sure Seven stood tall. And the match was thrown out due to just the ref couldn't get control. They fought all over the place, took the entire locker room of NWA Chattanooga to break them apart, and they've signed now on January 20th, 2012. NWA Chattanooga returns to Soddy Daisy Middle School. It's going to be Tank against Seven in a dog collar match. You heard that right. Those two guys, 300-plus pounds of each of them, are going to be strapped and harnessed with leather dog collars with 10-foot a log and chain between them, and there's no disqualification, no count-out. It's just going to be a fight to the finish, and we'll know who the true Southeastern heavyweight champion is after all that is over. Also announced on that card, Scenic City Hall of Fame, coming back with one of the greatest tag team wrestlers in all of the history of the business, and perhaps one of the greatest wrestlers individually himself, in my opinion. Body of work speaks for itself, but one half of the Rock and Roll Express, Ricky Morton, will be inducted into the Scenic City Hall of Fame, as will Pat Rose, a legendary Chattanooga figure here. So it's going to be a big card on January 20th. Also have Patrick Bentley and Sean Tempers, two out of three falls for the NWA North American Heavyweight Championship. Tomorrow night, November the 26th, 2011, I will be returning to NWA Anarchy. Last time we were there, me and the Hate Junkies and the NWA Anarchy Heavyweight Champion Azrael left the Urban Assault Squad in a bad way. We beat them and then we embarrassed them. We pinned them in the no disqualification, false count anywhere match, street fight, as we said we would. And then we had to just rub it in their face a little bit, so we took Nemesis, we used those zip ties to tie him up, and I held a staff of righteousness to his face and made him watch as we hung his tag team partner, Shadow Jackson, over the top rope. And hey, say the Hate Junkies hanging a black man. Oh, Lord, the racist fires have been fueled. We're just giving it back to them, folks. They did it to everyone else. Race has nothing to do with this. We are colorblind. All forms of hatred go when it comes to the Hate Junkies, and nobody is more equal or less equal than the other. We hate every one of you, so get used to it. Moving on, running an awful lot about the wrestling, but hey, it's the Midnight Black Mass. I'm conducting service here, and if you don't like it, then tune out, baby, because we got a long ride to take you, and the fires of hell are breathing up my backside. We've got no particular special guest tonight in that respect. We're actually doing what I call the Reverend Compound Thanksgiving Dinner. I've sent out an open invite to many of my colleagues and friends that I've managed or been involved with in one way or another to call and give their reflections on 2011 as we're drawing to a close here, and just opinions, anything they want to talk about. And when they do, then we will discuss that. That'll be in the special guest portion of the show. We'll also have another edition of TV Casualty, reviewing Batman the Animated Series and the Muji Movie Minute. On to the music news. Let's talk about Guns N' Roses, because they're one of the hot things going, one of the biggest tours. tours. Recent controversy over a date cancellation, but I understand they did follow up with the next date, so it had something to do more individually with the venue and perhaps the agreement that they've done or they've made with the people there in management. So hopefully that's not a sign of a derailment of the tour, but just a speed bump, if you will. But they're still doing big business all over the country with Axl Rose and his new band, with Dizzy Reed being the only prior member to this incarnation. But they saw fantastic reviews, as we said. Jeff G. Bailey said it was one of the best concerts he ever been to. That's pretty impressive if you know that resume of that man. But Axl was actually on Eddie Trunk's That Metal Show on VH1 Classic. You can catch every Saturday night at 11 o'clock. Check your local cable provider to find out when that's airing. But a very in-depth and revealing interview, one of the first television interviews Axl Rose has granted in many, many years. And you got to see another side of Axl that, you know, maybe a lot of the hype and hysteria around his craziness is blown up. I mean, hey, you got to be a motherfucking rock star if you're a rock star. That's just the way it goes. And sometimes people that ain't a fucking rock star just won't understand it. Sometimes you got to be a dick because, hey, you're in the business of selling tickets and making music. And Axl Rose does that better than anybody. He creates that controversy around him. He is a true rock star. But it's just, I highly recommend you go into VH1Classic.com. They actually have many of the episodes of That Metal Show streaming. If you're a fan, it's a good show. I don't always agree with the host's opinions on things, but it does generate good discussion between me and my cohorts, and I do enjoy that. So I want to check out the Axl Rose exclusive video interview on That Metal Show. New albums that came out this week. One of my favorite bands, and I really don't get off on a lot of newer bands. Like we talked about this with previous guests, it's not a thing I have against them. It's just I've heard so much great stuff over my life, it's hard to reach me. But one of the newer bands that does, and I saw them live, they generated controversy themselves. They had church people protesting outside. The front man ripped up a Bible and dedicated a recent song to the dead Pope. They got all this makeup, but their music is there. That's Behemoth, and they're Gall and Company. These European cats, man, they take this shit seriously, you know? And let me tell you something, one hell of an energetic, and there's not a death metal band out there that sounds like Behemoth. But they got a new release out this week called Demonica on Metal Blade Records. You want to check that out. Most powerful death metal band out there as far as recent bands to come across anyway. And then the classic stoner doom metalers Cathedral, British Cats, putting out a new album on Rise Above Records called Anniversary. If you're into the slow down groove, then Cathedral is the way to go there. They bring you the Black Sabbath inspired sounds. Television, moving on to TV news. Sons of Anarchy, folks. If you ain't watching this show, then I don't know where you're at in your life. You really need to reevaluate your situation. You really need to just think over some of the decisions you made and say, why am I not watching this show? Because I could be experiencing television greatness, and I'm talking edge of the seat. I can't really talk too much about the details of this week's episode because I don't want to spoil it for those that haven't watched it, but get with the fucking program, people. No better drama on television than I've seen. Now, a couple of friends have said Breaking Bad is the best thing recently. I haven't started it yet, but I find it hard to believe. I'll let you know once I get there. Coming up with the Moody Movie Minute here in just a few moments, we're going to go do some more jams. Going to bring out a little classic Motorhead for you right now. Lemmy with Metropolis. We'll be right back. Neil Mister with Metropolis off of the Overkill album. Motorhead, one of the greatest bands that's ever been. I really tell you, they just have the most raw attitude. I always said I wanted to be in a Motorhead cover band, and that might be my next musical project, because that music is so basic, but played with so much heart and so much balls. And I would highly recommend, actually, the documentary on Lemmy's life called Lemmy, 49% motherfucker, 51% son of a bitch. It's out on DVD now. You can get it on Netflix, not on the streaming, but on the DVD rental. But I'd suggest purchasing a copy of it, a unique look into the life of a true metal icon. But fans, it's now time for the weekly segment here. We like to call the Muji Movie Minute. Looking at the best and the worst of horror cinema. And at this time, I have on the line my best pal since birth, the one and only Greg Muji. How you doing this Thanksgiving Eve? Did you eat a lot of turkey?
Oh, yeah, super stuff, super stuff. How about you?
But you know I will only feast like a king. And when I dig into meat, a bird or whatever that's been prepared to haul sometimes, you know, I will ravage it like that of an animal in the wilderness, freshly capturing prey. So I ate a shitload of turkey, to simplify that answer.
Of course, of course. All right, cool. So we've got a couple things to talk about this week. Speaking of digging into meat, the first movie that we're going to talk about is Raw Meat from 1973. A little gem we found on Netflix there. It stars Donald Pleasance, and he is working in Scotland Yard, and a bunch of people start disappearing in, like, the surrounding areas and stuff. And then when a civil servant, some high-ranking government guy, is gone, and they can't find him, they start taking it seriously, start looking for what's happening to people. And it turns out that in this one tunnel down in the subway type area, like train platforms, these crazy mutants are cannibals who are like pulling people off the railway down there and eating them and trying to rape them and stuff. And it's really creepy.
Yeah, I thought that was that one of the things that movie had going for it right off. It wasn't incredibly interesting in terms of the way they played things out, but it had a disturbing quality about it that the cannibals really, the moans and the sounds they made really set a good atmosphere.
Yeah, they were really creepy. And then when the cannibals, at one point, one of them tries to, they pull down this couple, kind of the main deal, and at one point one of the cannibals is, it seems like he's like trying to rape her, and he's like slapping her. I'm laughing, but he's like slapping her and stuff and like making this really creepy yelling sound and stuff, and it's just really weird and really creepy and just disturbing. I mean the plot of the movie, it's like Donald Pleasance is, you know, one of my favorites of all time, and you know, his character is just, like, it's hard to follow what he's even doing. He's, like, trying to investigate this stuff, but he keeps just giving, like, these mini speeches and not really doing anything. And then these guys are down there just getting beat up pretty much the whole movie. But, like, down in the trenches where all the cannibals are, yeah, it's just, they scream and do all, you know, all this stuff. And there's this really weird, like, electronic music that they use as a soundtrack that, you know, just creates a really disturbing vibe. The story itself is pretty simple, and actually it's not really hard to follow. It's just kind of, you know, all over the place, like what's going on. But it's definitely a disturbing movie for sure.
And one of the weird things about Donald Pleasance in that movie, you know, we know him, of course, as Sam Loomis from Halloween, and he was in his twilight at that point, getting on up there in age, but in this movie, he's still old, but he doesn't look anything like he's very slender, small guy, no beard, and he's got almost a baby face, but, you know, his hair's already gray, so obviously he's an elderly gentleman. He had been around for a long time. I know he'd done theater and was a very well-respected British actor. It's just very interesting to see a younger Donald Pleasance, but still not quite young.
Yeah, that's true. He was only 5 years, you know, this is 73 and Halloween 78, so this is, you know, 5 years previous, but he did look about 15 years younger for sure. And, yeah, I mean, this was, he'd already been in Bond and everything by this point, so he was a pretty big deal. But, so the movie's definitely worth watching. It's a little hidden, it's kind of classic in its own way just because of how disturbing it is. I gave it 58% well done. It's got, the story is pretty, about the most simplest thing of all time, but the, you know, the goriness and the weirdness makes it worth watching.
Yes, and another thing I have to say a positive about that movie was, you said 73 was the release date, 1973. I don't think maybe some of the Herschel Gordon Lewis stuff, but that was done with such a great degree of camp. The effects for the corpses that were mangled and that they found under the streets and the sewer where the cannibals were maiming them, very realistic, top-notch, way ahead of its time stuff in the effects department there.
Yeah, they looked pretty good. You know, it was a lot of the times, like, the scene was set was really dark and really shadowy, so, you know, what I would assume probably wasn't a huge budget they were able to cover by the way that they shot it and used the darkness and everything on the effects. It did look pretty good. Interesting fact, actually, I read, too, is that they considered it too gory, so they had to cut it way down. Like, the version you see on Netflix right now has a lot of extra things in there that had to be cut out of both the theatrical release and the old, like, DVD and video releases. So compared to, like, the DVD and video releases, there's, like, almost, like, 5 minutes of extra footage of just the gore. Some of the scenes they considered so gory that they just simply didn't show you the kill that they actually show in the movie.
Yeah, and that was actually part of a re-released thing for Netflix. And I found the movie just by the little emblem that was on it. If you look real close, they'll say an MGM Midnight movie. And they're apparently a bunch of lesser-known horror films that they have re-released just recently through MGM. And it seems like every one of those I've caught has been pretty well a gem. So, you know, if you're looking for it, if you see that emblem, I'd say it's Rev approved to steal from Jimmy Rave a little bit.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. And then the second movie just to throw in is The Strangers from 2008. I caught this just sitting around, got stuffed and didn't feel like leaving the couch, and it came on HBO, so I checked it out again. I hadn't watched it since when it came out. I remember being really, really excited when it came out because of the previews and everything. You know, they're pretty simple, didn't give too much away, and it looked pretty creepy, and it's a pretty decent flick. It's got some, like, really good parts. I'd say the first, like, 25 minutes of the movie is really, really good, but then it gets, from there, it gets, like, a little repetitive. Of course, the basic story is a couple, one of them played by Liv Tyler, and then another dude is in Scott Speedman, but that probably doesn't make anyone recognize him. But they're in a house. They've decided to go to this house, an isolated, like, vacation home, where they're hanging out there. Right off the bat, they're having some sort of trouble. They're all crying and stuff. I think they're trying to, like, reconnect or something down at the place. And then all of a sudden a girl comes up with a mask on. It's like trying to get into the house, and she's all creepy, and then, you know, she's at the wrong house, and they send her on her way. Don't think anything about it, and then throughout the night all these different people in masks come and start kind of terrorizing them. They keep, you know, just knocking on the door and, you know, just being loud and, you know, threatening them from outside the house and stuff. And for the first few minutes it really, really works. But after a while, there's a really big, like, first, like, 20, 25 minutes is really good, and then there's, like, another, like, 20 to 25 minutes before anything really happens where they just keep repeating the things over and over, and that part of the movie gets kind of slow because there's really no reason not for the family that's outside just to come in. But then it finishes up, and it's pretty decent. It's worth watching. It's got the actual, when there is violence, it is really violent and stuff. I think they just, the middle act of the movie was slow and kept it from being, like, a really good movie.
Yeah, I remember that movie, and particularly the year it came out, because there wasn't a lot of great horror coming out that year. Really stood out to me. Yeah, just good atmosphere, unique principle, even though they went with some big names like Liv Tyler. You know, just the faceless killers or the faceless tormentors. Very, very effectively done. So simple, but just really shows how much mileage you can get out of something that's simple when you play on basic human fear.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. And, yeah, it's, like, super small. I mean, there's less than, like, 10 people in the whole movie. And all the stuff that actually is scary is, you know, most of it is created from, you know, just what you can't see. Like, you know the people are outside, but, you know, you don't know, like, what's, you know, what's going to happen with them. So that's all they do. They create a lot of suspense that way. It's pretty good. So when it gets down to it, when the killers actually come after them, it's not as good as you would expect for a while. It takes a minute to get back to the point. But then when they actually do go after them at the end, and, you know, they kind of leave you not knowing who's dead at the end. But when they attack the couple, once they finally catch them and stuff, it is, like, really brutal again. It's pretty scary. And I remember, too, after that movie came out, there were, I don't know, kind of like a lot of movies like that for a really short period of time. I guess it actually came out like after Vacancy did, which had kind of the same premise, but there was like, you know how things do when they're successful. There were like 15 of those movies that came out in like a 2-year period right then. But I like that movie pretty good. I give it 65% well done. It's well acted, and like I said, 2/3 of the movie is really good, but the 1/3 kind of slow.
Excellent. And we do want to apologize to you fans. I know we promised you a review of the new Guillermo del Toro flick with Katie Holmes, Don't Be Afraid of the Dark, but we actually miscalculated the release date of that, so we were unable to procure it within legal means, but we will be procuring it soon, and we will definitely have it just as soon as that comes out on DVD here in the States. Can't be much longer since it's already out overseas. I'd imagine just within the next couple of weeks. So we will be bringing that flick to you. Any ideas for next week, or we're just going to cruise the flicks? Maybe I think it might be time with the holiday season nearing, only 30 shopping days left till Christmas, that we check out maybe Silent Night, Deadly Night.
Yeah, we could definitely check that out for the next couple of weeks. The horror movies that are coming out on DVD are kind of low. There's not a lot to choose from, so it's probably going to be best. We could definitely do Silent Night, Deadly Night, and check something out on the flicks. I think the first of the year is when most of the horror movies that were in theaters over the, you know, kind of the summer to the end of the year are going to start hitting. So, I mean, we'll get influx with a whole bunch of them all at once, but it is a little bit slow. I guess Christmas time, your average person doesn't think, you know, isn't going out looking for horror movies around Christmas. Of course, it would be cool for us, but most people, you know, that's, you know, they're releasing all the big blockbusters and everything on DVD right now.
You know, there is one on Netflix that I've passed by a couple of times, and I've almost dared to watch it just out of morbid curiosity. And that's a movie called Santa's Sleigh, starring Bill Goldberg as a satanic Santa Claus, which I think we owe it to our listeners to review that flick.
Yeah, we could check it. It's been like 3 or 4 years, I guess, probably around the time it came out. I caught like the end of it on HBO, but I don't really remember anything. I remember it being entertaining for all the wrong reasons. The short period of time, the few minutes that I watched, but I didn't get to see the whole thing. So, you know, you might as well. It could turn out to be a classic, you know, just for being horrible. But, you know, it's better to be a classic, you know, for being horrible than just being bad and forgettable, for sure.
Excellent. Okay. Well, the only reason we won't have a show next week, folks, is if my daughter is born, as she could be popping out any day now. Just to give you a fair warning on that, but assuming she does not come that night, there will be a show next Friday night, and let's go ahead and say we're going to try to get our hands on them, Santa's Sleigh and Silent Night, Deadly Night, in the spirit of the season, if you will. Muji, thank you for joining us again this week, my friend, go eat you some pumpkin pie and pass out watching television or whatever you're going to do.
All right, will do, man.
All right, man. See ya.
See ya.
Okay, that was Muji for the Muji Movie Minute. Another great edition of that. Fans, we got plenty of show left to come. Next track I'm going to play for you, I'm going to spin it out right here, is by a friend of the Midnight Black Mass, a man by the name of Gideon Smith, of Gideon Smith and the Dixie Damned, cult iconic southern rock metal, whatever you want to call them, just good old-fashioned rock and roll suits him just fine. Great band. He was a guest previously on the show and actually one of our best episodes, I thought, back on the old Dragon's Rejects days on Blog Talk Radio before we migrated here to GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com. So I'm going to play a song for you. Very familiar experience. Have you ever been at a party where you may or may not have ingested an illicit substance and you're sitting back and maybe you got stuck with a bunch of hippies and you didn't really want to hang out with the hippies, but, you know, somebody said there's going to be some girls there or what have you. You get stuck and they got this wizard poster, the little black light thing, and they turn it on and it starts messing with you. That's what this song is about. Gideon Smith and the Dixie Damned here on the Midnight Black Mass.
to the GWH Radio Network, brought to you by GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com. Your show will return momentarily. Did you know that there's more to GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com than just Georgia Wrestling History? It's true. Not only can you find documented cards, results, and more on pro wrestling in Georgia dating back to the 19th century, but you can also find out where live and local wrestling may be near you today, and not just in Georgia. We also cover the southeastern regional scene in Alabama, Florida, Tennessee, and the Carolinas. You want more? Well, we also cover the major worldwide wrestling and MMA promotions as well, including WWE, UFC, TNA, Strikeforce, Ring of Honor, and more. And so do our radio shows. You can find all of this, and maybe a bit more, by logging on to GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com, where we are capturing the legends of yesterday and covering the stars of today. GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com.
And that was Gideon Smith and the Dixie Damned with Black Light Wizard Poster off the 2008 album South Side of the Moon. Gideon, good friend of the show, would highly recommend you go over to blogtalkradio.com/dragonsrejects, where the archive is still up for my prior shows, and check out that interview. Or if you want to be patient, maybe if next Friday my little Rory comes, that's my daughter, by the way, if she comes, then maybe they can play the Gideon Smith interview. It was a great time and very interesting man, lived a hell of a life. And a great interview, and that was a hell of a song. And fans, we're now going to move forward to the next segment of the Midnight Black Mass. That's right. It's time for TV Casualty, our exclusive episode-by-episode look at the DC Animated Universe. To explain that to you, that is DC Comics, of course, their iconic characters. Back in 1992, this began a project starting with what we're on now, Batman the Animated Series, widely regarded as one of the greatest animated shows in the history of television, one of the greatest comic-to-screen translations in any medium of all time, and one of my, if not my, all-time favorite television show, perhaps. And that bled into Superman, the animated series, which bled into Justice League, and even more. We're focusing on the central components, starting with Batman, the animated series. Last week, we talked about the debut episode of the show on Leather Wings, where Batman tangled with the Man Bat. But this week, just in time for the holidays, we're going to look at episode 2, Christmas with the Joker. This is the first introduction of the Joker to the series. They held off on debuting him in the first episode because they wanted to avoid immediate comparisons to Nicholson and the things they'd done just a couple years earlier with the first Tim Burton Batman film. So you see the debut of Mark Hamill in a role he would reprise until this year, 2011, when he's finally exclaimed that he is going to retire from voicing the role of the Joker. My opinion, just mine, we had a debate about this in the locker room at Anarchy last week. Mark Hamill is the greatest Joker of all time, in my opinion. A lot of people disagree with that, and that's fine. I can't argue against you choosing Heath Ledger or Jack Nicholson. Even I could see the point of Cesar Romero. He had a different flair. Certainly, my opinion wasn't the greatest, but if he's your guy, awesome. But my opinion, Mark Hamill captured the character of the Joker the best of any medium that has been done. He captured the ability to be the sinister killer as well as the harmless prankster, and with the Joker and him being totally batshit insane, to use a bit of a pun, you never knew which one you were going to get. He might pull the gun out with the bang flag on it, and he might pull the gun out that blows your head off your shoulders. So Mark Hamill captured that perfectly. And basically the plot of this is Christmas Eve in Gotham City. The inmates of Arkham Asylum are participating in carols and whatnot. They're setting up a tree. They got a big party. They're singing Jingle Bells, and of course, the Joker is getting ready to top the tree with the star and bust into his own rendition of Jingle Bells, which I found hilariously awesome because, you know, you'd heard this on the playground at school since you were a small child with the Jingle Bells, Batman smells, Robin laid an egg. Batmobile lost its wheel and Joker got away. So you need the actual Joker sings this song and then proceeds to launch the tree like a rocket, and it shoots up out of the ground and he busts through the roof of Arkham Asylum and escapes. A little silly, sure, but it's the Joker and it's a cartoon and it's very well done. So you can go back to the Batcave. Robin is trying to talk Batman into just chilling and watching It's a Wonderful Life and participating in actual Christmas activities, and Batman's not having any of that, of course. He wants to go out and patrol. And then he knows the Joker's escaped, so he knows there's some nefarious activity afoot. But Robin makes a deal with him. He says if they go out on patrol and they don't see the Joker, they'll come back and they'll watch It's a Wonderful Life. And then Batman busts a hilarious quip by stating that he never watched It's a Wonderful Life because he couldn't get past the title. Ba-da-boom, boom, oh. So they go out on patrol and they're surveying Gotham City, and it's Christmas Eve and there doesn't seem to be any activity. They see this little punk trying to, what they think is a little punk going to harass a grandma, and he actually helps her across the street. So they're surveying, they don't see anything, they keep going. Robin wants to go home, and Batman just leaves him, you know, giving him the cold shoulder, and Robin mutters under his breath that, you know, he could give some lessons to Scrooge. So Robin follows him. They go back home. They're watching television, and It's a Wonderful Life isn't on. Instead, the Joker, of course, has pirated the television waves for his Christmas special, Christmas with the Joker. He then shows a tank with a giant Santa Claus on the top crashing through the city. Batman and Robin, of course, instantly check the Bat computer against the what's being transmitted from the television and trace a signal. And as the show's still on, they're watching it, you know, the Batmobile, and they see that they've kidnapped his awful, lawful family, who's Commissioner Gordon, Summer Gleason, the reporter, and Harvey Bullock. Joker tells Batman he can have them if he can find them by midnight. If he fails, they die. So they're starting to track him and looking for him. We had a little frog in my throat. Joker reveals Laffy, his old Christmas elf. Laffy and the Joker explain that they'll blow up a rail bridge just in time for the 11:30 train to arrive. Batman goes to the train, and while Batman goes after the engineer, Robin fixes the cars. They save the passengers, and then they pinpoint the Joker's signal. When they reach it, they find out that it's a dud. He just left the transmitter there. So they get past the booby trap and they move on. Of course, they end up finding the Joker, and it goes down. The awful, lawful family almost gets executed, but Batman and Robin save them. Hilarious part where Joker plays the dance of the sugar plum fairies, and they're attacked by several giant toy nutcrackers. Eventually, of course, Batman and Robin get the better of them. Joker manages to evade him, but trips on a roller skate and almost falls into a vat of acid. Batman saves him and bids him a Merry Christmas, with the Joker replying, "Bah, humbug." Later, Bruce Wayne and Dick Grayson finish watching It's a Wonderful Life, and Batman finally says it had its moments. Meanwhile, the Joker spends another Christmas all alone in Arkham Asylum. And fans, that was this week's edition of TV Casualty, discussing Batman, the animated series. The episode was number 2, Christmas with the Joker. One of my all-time favorite episodes in the history of Batman, the animated series. I have often watched that as an annual holiday tradition, and I recommend you do the same for your family, because it warms your heart to see Christmas with the Joker. All right, going to get us some more tunes. We'll still have the Compound Thanksgiving Dinner if anybody calls in, but we're at 10:48 right now. Don't have any guests at the table, and that's quite all right. They might be out Black Friday shopping. I'm here to entertain you, and I got plenty of material still to go. Going to go with a new track, brand new single off of the new album by Atlanta-based Mastodon, the Rush, in my opinion, of new metal bands. Very spacey guys in a good way, extremely creative, and this new album, The Hunter, no different. This song is, I couldn't even tell you what it's about. Listen to the lyrics and make your own determination. It's simply called Curl of the Burl. Demand to yet again attempt to summon the spirits of the dead. This is a little segment we like to call the Seance of the Damned. And what I'm going to do right now is, of course, listen to the soothing tones of the tubular bells and prepare the incantation. Oh, summon a Nastrasna. Oh, summon a Nistasto Nastrasna. I call to ye, spirits of the damned. I call to ye, spirits of all of the outer realms, whether ye be of the dark or the light, of the human or the inhuman. I ask you to join us and manifest yourself in the white noise. You're on the midnight black mass. Okay, well, maybe we're barren tonight. I don't know if I got the mojo flow. Wait a minute. I spoke too soon, folks. We do have a guest on the line. Whom have we summoned here tonight? Whom are we speaking with?
This is Jake the Snake, brother.
Jake, are you dead this time?
Yeah, I'm dead.
Really?
Yep. Dead tired from all this turkey I ate. Had all the fixings, brother.
Damn it, Jake. Now, I told you not to use this line. It's reserved for the dead.
No disrespect. I just thought for your Thanksgiving special, you might want to hear a Turkey Day story with a little moral to it.
Okay, I guess since it fits the theme, but make it quick.
Okay, well, once there was a man named Jake. And he went to a gathering at the robber's family home where he and his tribe broke bread. And first they had a nice salad. It was a Cobb salad. And it made me think about that episode of Curb Your Enthusiasm where the guy tells Larry David that his granddad invented the Cobb salad. But Larry finds out he has been a victim of deceit. So I wonder, where does this Cobb salad come from? So I went on Wikipedia. Please, Jake, the Thanksgiving story.
Right.
So then I have some ham, some dressing, some turkey. Turkey was a little dry. I assume it was overcooked. Usually overcooked meat is dry. I learned that watching Hell's Kitchen.
Jake!
Sorry. Then I had some cranberry sauce, some green beans, some dinner rolls. Then I was offered some pumpkin pie, and I said no. Do you have blackberry pie? And I was told no, they did not possess any blackberry pie. So I settled on cherry pie, which I thought was a very good compromise.
Okay, Jake, you said there was a moral to this story.
Oh, yeah. Well, there ain't.
What the fuck? You wasted all this time telling me about your dinner?
Yes, there was no moral to that story. But the moral to our story, Rev...
Don't touch the snake. That's it. See ya. Goodbye. Practical jokers. Everybody wants to be a prankster. I don't quite understand it. Should have seen it coming. Okay, let's try this again. Lo summon nostrasna. Spirits, manifest thyself in the airwaves here on the Midnight Black Mass. Do we have a guest?
We do. It's Johnny Cochran, baby. Johnny Cochran.
Oh, Johnny Cochran, huh? Look at the pretty monkey, famous lawyer of O.J. Simpson. Wow. Where are you calling up from tonight, Mr. Cochran?
Objection. That is irrelevant.
Oh, well, I bet I can guess now. So why are you calling?
Well, Rev, it seems that there's a lot of innocent people out there getting a bad rap. I just want to make sure I clear their names.
Okay, sure. I'm with that, man. I don't like to be seen nobody held down by the man or otherwise. So who you got? Like whom?
Like that case of Anthony. Only thing that girl was guilty of was having a good time and a tight ass.
Well, they did find her not guilty. I mean, despite what the opinion.
No, exactly. Not in the court of public opinion. She needs to sue all these people, everybody, Nancy Grace and all these people that done slandered her. I knew from the beginning she was innocent. If those tight jeans fit, honey, you must have quit. You know what I mean?
No, I don't.
And what about Phil Spector? He's far too rich to be guilty.
Well, now, he was found guilty, and it did seem pretty conclusive.
An old white man asks a girl to kiss a gun, and it goes off and blows her head off. Open and shut case of innocence, if you ask me. And there's plenty more of Robert Wagner, innocent. The guy from I Love Money, innocent. John Wilkes Booth, Jack the Ripper, Michael Myers, innocent.
Well, now you're just being ridiculous, Mr. Cochran. Michael Myers is not even a real person. He's fictitious.
Exactly. That proves he must be innocent.
Okay, well, we're moving along here, fans. I think that's all the time we got for you, Johnny. Any last words?
Yes. Buy my book, Where There's Murder, There's Innocence, available where people are dead.
Okay. Goodbye, Mr. Cochran. Okay, I think another seance is come and gone. Oh, no. Please tell me it's not another inhuman spirit. It kind of smelled like this the last time. Who do we have with us, folks? You're talking to the Crippler, Chris Benoit. Wow, Chris Benoit, one of the greatest technical wrestlers of all time, multiple-time world champion, WrestleMania main eventer. I had some other things we're not going to address right now, but what's going on, man? How are you? Well, not a lot, Rev, not a lot. Just been watching the Monday Night Raw on the DirecTV. On TiVo, I assume? Yes, on TiVo. So you get DirecTV in the afterlife. Oh, yeah, I've got the whole package. The HBOs, the Showtimes, really good discount for the deceased. Ah, good to know. We lost FX for a few days, so I had to go haunt Dean Malenko's house, but I had to watch my Sons of Anarchy fix. You know, that's a different story altogether. Well, thank you for taking the time to join the show, Chris. I know you said you were watching Monday Night Raw on your TiVo. What do you think about wrestling these days, now that you see it from a non-participatory standpoint? I really don't know what to think, you know. All the guys are so small. They used to call me small, but I'd be like Hogan size today, you know. I don't know if they'd even, or if I'd even have to bump against most of these guys. Well, I wouldn't go that far, but yes, there's certainly a lot of smaller guys in the wrestling industry, and that's a common criticism in some respects with the wrestlers that are popular with the internet crowd, which you certainly used to be a top dog in that line of fans, but you kind of ran those off. We're not going to go there again. But, and all the guys look the same, you know. Apparently all you have to do these days, like you go up and you march into Supercuts, you ask for a number two, and then you go to the tattoo parlor and you pick out a tribal from the catalog, and I guess that's all it takes to be a WWE superstar. Eh? Well, it has also been said that all wrestlers today, or a lot of them, do look the same. A cookie cutter has been used to describe that. And what happened to all the tough guys, eh? You know, if you're going to get a tattoo, you should get like a Popeye Inker or, I Love Mother or one of the classics. You know, for God's sakes, man, somebody needs to bring back the mullet. All the greats had a mullet. Me, Guerrero, Scott Steiner, Hogan. Hogan had the skullet. I mean, Sting had a rat tail, for goodness sakes. And you know, I just don't know about these pansies these days. Well, they do. A lot of guys want to emulate you, in terms of your wrestling. And I thank you for staying focused on that. But we're really running out of time, Chris. I thank you so much for joining us. Any final thoughts? No, just going to kick back here on the TiVo. Thanks for having me, Rev. You're a real, real nice fella. Okay, well, thank you for joining us. That was a little odd, and do we really have another guest? This is expending a lot of my energy here, folks. I have to channel these spirits. Who do we have? Who do we have on the line?
Oh, it's Johnny Cochran one more time. I was just listening on the other line, and I had to tell you, Chris Benoit, innocent.
Okay. Well, there you go, Chris. According to Johnny Cochran on the Midnight Black Mass, Chris Benoit is innocent. Take that for what you will. I will give you the same disclaimer I always give you. None of those personalities or entities may be who they claim they are. You know, could be demons. We are opening portals to hell here. So you have to be careful. Demons are tricksters, and I've said that many times. So from a legal perspective in particular, there's certainly no guarantee, nor am I claiming that we just spoke to Johnny Cochran and Chris Benoit and or Jake the Snake Roberts, for that matter. But anything's possible on the Midnight Black Mass, I suppose. Fans, another great edition of the show. We're running out of time here, and we did not have the advertised Thanksgiving dinner. I guess the Revs family was just too busy out with their families, and that's fine because we filled an hour of me talking, baby, and I can do that all night long. And I'm not done just yet. That was all we had in terms of music, all we had in terms of scheduled segments, except for one. I'm going to leave you with the return tonight of the Revs rant. Now, don't get off on these tangents a lot in terms of the wrestling business. I'm trying to want to save the Revs rant to be something that was just me expressing my opinion on the world. And I've found many ways to do that, but when I just got to get down to the meat and potatoes of it, the Revs rant is a perfect segment for that. But now, I've seen something that's crawled my ass, and I'm not going to name the guy's name to give him the fucking satisfaction of knowing I put him over here, because I ain't putting him over. But there's recently a thing on the fucking internet with, you know, like I said before on one of the first episodes, what do we need more? The Revs rant is this too, but so fucking what? More people bitching on the internet. So, but here we go. I'm going to bitch a little more. And this is just related to people in the wrestling business. So if you're not in the wrestling business, thank you for enjoying this edition of the Midnight Black Mass, and we will see you next week, fans. I appreciate you, and I hope you're having a good holiday season with your family and raising a little hell, because it just wouldn't be prudent if you didn't. But good night to you. But if you're in the wrestling business, there was a column posted on this very website, GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com, in relationship to the National Wrestling Alliance. And first, I got to step up and defend the National Wrestling Alliance a little bit because, A, I'm a promoter of the brand. B, it's given me everything I've accomplished in the last 20 years, and not the NWA in and of itself, because it is just that, a brand, but the people involved, men like Bill Behrens, who is one of the most honest men in the whole business of professional wrestling, and you ain't going to find that in a whole lot of circumstances. He's taken care of a lot of fucking people and gone above and beyond what is required of him because he loves the business and the people in it. And he's taken good care of me in my career, and the NWA has been a constant part of that. So maybe, perhaps, I'm a little biased and my opinion shouldn't count, but I'm going to express it anyway. Negative comments, not worth anything, the National Wrestling Alliance was described as. And I say, as a promoter, and so actually somebody who's been in the business 11 years and who's got family in the business, even you know, a long time before that. Quit being a fucking mark, you know? Quit being a fucking mark. You're supposed to be a professional. You're not, like, why the hell would you go bury any company or establishment that might get you booked? Because that's the whole purpose of your existence, is to sell tickets to wrestling matches so you can get paid. A promoter can make money off of you, and you can enhance your career. No matter how you accomplish that, that's the goal of a professional wrestler. And if you're not doing everything you can to do that, then you're a fucking mark. And you need to get the hell out of the locker room, because you don't belong in the brotherhood of professional wrestling. Because it is a tight-knit brotherhood. And to me, you have betrayed that brotherhood when you go out and you just, when people go on the internet and make fools of themselves like that. I got no problem making a fool of myself, so you want to cross me, then fine, but, you know, I don't want to go there. It's just a matter of opinion. That's certainly this guy's opinion, but my opinion is if you're a professional, then you should act like one, and you should not try to bury people that might pay you and give you work. or exposure or what have you. For me, the NWA brand is what you get out of it. It's what you put into it is what you get out of it. The NWA is an established brand. It's not trying to reopen a company like, you know, Buttfuck Championship Wrestling Extreme Outlaws. You know, now you got to get the T-shirts made. All you're trying to do is sell tickets. Anything else that you're doing out of your own creativity is just, that's your personal preference. It's your personal spin on it. There might be a little bit of markness in that, but whatever. But you still need to be looking at the bottom line of selling tickets and running a professional organization. And to me, using the NWA brand, is it is somewhat an established brand. It's certainly not what it was in the 1980s, and everybody knows that. But it resonates in people's minds. They've heard it before, even if they don't know it, just subtextually they've heard it. They know the NWA brand, at least in part. It's simple. It's three letters. It's recognizable. You already have a logo. And at the bottom of the day, we're all promoting professional wrestling. You can get fancy with different styles, and there certainly are many. But, you know, if you're a professional and you're in the industry, to go bury a promotion online, or a body of promotions in this case, is fucking career suicide. You know, and maybe not. There's certainly people who have succeeded without the help of the National Wrestling Alliance. You know, these days everybody's trying to get a job in TNA or WWE, and you certainly don't have to go through the NWA to do it. But a legend by the name of Ricky Morton once had a great quote that said, just be careful of the toes you step on way up, because they might just be connected to the asses you're going to have to kiss on the way back down. And that goes for everybody in the business, because I've seen many come and many go. And I've seen many guys think they had $1 million at their feet, only to throw it away, or not even give the opportunity, or piss off the wrong person, and it's happened in many cases. But regardless, just my two cents on the NWA. You know, you'd have to be an idiot to think it was the same NWA of the 1980s in terms of what it means to the wrestling industry. No, but it is a viable brand. And it's all up to the individual promoters, and there are plenty of them doing a great job out there, like the cooperation you're seeing between NWA Anarchy and Rampage and Chattanooga and NWA Pro South. It's pretty well unprecedented in indie wrestling in a long time, and it's been a growing cooperative effort, you know, for over a year or more now. Or it would, in the case of Anarchy and Rampage, and Anarchy and NWA Chattanooga, and Rampage and NWA Chattanooga. It's just, it really is using the brand for what it's meant for, and that's creating credible professional wrestling that at the end of the day, people are going to buy tickets to. Wrestlers are going to get paid from, get more exposure in front of more people, and get more experience, so maybe they can get that spot in the TNA or the WWE, like many who came through our doors have. And that's all I'm going to say. I know I'm rambling at this point, and that's fine. I've talked for well over an hour tonight. We had a great edition of the Midnight Black Mass. We're going to be back next week, hopefully with a huge guest, just waiting on that final confirmation. I'll go ahead and drop that as the final bombshell, since he has agreed to do the show. We just have not set the date. But tentatively, it could be next week. You'll know for sure when we put up some updates. Marvel Comics writer Jason Aaron, writer currently of The Incredible Hulk, Wolverine and the X-Men, Punisher Max. This guy is one of the freshest voices in all of literature, and he has agreed to appear on the Midnight Black Mass. I'm very excited about that, and it could be as early as next week, but of course we have the hectic scheduling with the baby and what have you coming. But thank you for joining us again. I hope you get all stuffed and watch a movie marathon, have you a few cold beers, and I most of all hope you raise hell and do the devil's work. Thank you for joining us, and good night from the Midnight Black Mass.
You're listening to the GWH Radio Network, brought to you by GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com. Your show will return momentarily. Did you know that there's more to GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com than just Georgia Wrestling History? It's true. Not only can you find documented cards, results, and more on pro wrestling in Georgia dating back to the 19th century, but you can also find out where live and local wrestling may be near you today, and not just in Georgia. We also cover the southeastern regional scene in Alabama, Florida, Tennessee, and the Carolinas. You want more? Well, we also cover the major worldwide wrestling and MMA promotions as well, including WWE, UFC, TNA, Strikeforce, Ring of Honor, and more. And so do our radio shows. You can find all of this, and maybe a bit more, by logging on to GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com, where we are capturing the legends of yesterday and covering the stars of today. GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com. We thank you for listening to this broadcast, a production brought to you by GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com and the GWH Radio Network. Stay tuned to GWH for nostalgia, upcoming events, and more. As always, GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com thanks you for your continued support.